Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday afternoon, the 9th of June. James Fallows is our guest this hour. He has a piece in The Atlantic, How Fox News is Still Hurting the Republicans. There is something about watching Fox News that leads people to do worse on factual questions than those who don't watch any news at all. A political scientist on what Roger Ailes has wrought, including the problems that he is creating for his own GOP. James recommends that we read a detailed study by Bruce Bartlett, How Fox News Changed American Media and Political Dynamics. Bartlett is a veteran of the Reagan and Bush 41 administrations and was an influential proponent of supply-side tax cut economics. He also worked for Ron Paul. He's harshly criticized the Bush 43 administration, but in no sense, James writes, does he come at this as a Democratic Party operative, and evidently he's on the enemies list at Fox News. So we're going to talk about Fox this hour of the program with James. James, of course, national correspondent for The Atlantic Monthly. He has worked at the magazine for a long time. He writes about national security policy, American politics, technology, economic trends, U.S. relations with the Middle East, Asia, and other parts of the world. He served as President Jimmy Carter's chief speechwriter, and he is the author of a number of books, including Blind into Baghdad, Dad, America's War in Iraq, Breaking the News, How the Media Undermine American Democracy, Free Flight from Airline Hell to a New Age of Travel, and many other books. And we'll be welcoming phone calls for him. I'm sure many of you watch Fox News. We will also talk about the origins of Fox News and the outrage, perpetual outrage that you see on that channel. I must confess, I don't watch it very often. I do watch it occasionally. And, you know, I'm just kind of a nightly news. I'm old. I watch nightly news and some of the other news shows, but these shows, you wonder how much factual information there is, but, you know, I'm in this business, so I watch it every now and then. We welcome your phone calls. Some of you may watch regularly, some may not for certain reasons, but the studies here are very interesting, and James will talk about them with us, and we'll talk with you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. Hello, James. Thanks for being with us.
Kathleen, my pleasure, and I'll apologize in advance to you and your listeners. I sound like I have, you know, terminal pneumonia or something, but I'm actually healthier than I probably sound. It boosts my health to be talking with you.
Yeah, thanks, James, and ours too. It boosts our knowledge. I didn't know there was an enemies list at Fox News, that the person you cite in your article can't talk about anything on Fox because he wrote a critical book about George W. Bush.
There's apparently in the various studies of Roger Ailes in particular, he's made clear people who should not appear on the network, and they're much less likely to be Democrats or socialists or liberals or lefties than they are disloyal Republicans.
Oh.
So people like Bruce Bartlett, who has a long Republican Party history from Reagan onwards through the first George Bush, he's no longer welcome because, you know, he has been critical of the second George Bush and has been critical explicitly of Fox News. So it's one of the sort of the really fascinating conundrum of the ways in which Fox News straddles the boundaries between political organizations and news organizations and also entertainment organizations.
Mm-hmm. You quote some political scientists, David Frum, the former George W. Bush speechwriter. Republicans originally thought that Fox worked for us. Now we're discovering that we work for Fox. The Republicans feel they work for Fox. How so?
So I think he's David Frum, who now is also a colleague of mine on The Atlantic, where he writes a column, even though we often disagree on worldviews. On this one, the point he's making as a Republican Party member, he, of course, was one of George W. Bush's speechwriters. He wrote the Axis of Evil speech. His point is that the network has become a kind of kingmaker within the party in a way that doesn't really have a parallel for the Democrats. That is, many Republican candidates, when they're not actually running, they have presences as Fox News commentators. So Sarah Palin did that for a long time. Huckabee has been doing it. Donald Trump appears there. And also, in arranging these debates, Fox does seem to have a gatekeeper function in saying who's going to be able to be prominent among the Republicans and not otherwise. So David is talking about one aspect of this connection, which is the way the party is more dependent on the networks than is the case with the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. I was watching Fox in 2012 on election night and did catch that moment with Karl Rove and Megyn Kelly where she was saying, let's stop, as you write, operating in an atypical let's stop fooling ourselves mode. When will Republicans who care about winning national elections or actually governing stop thinking of Fox as a help and start viewing it as a hindrance? Karl Rove was insistent that I think numbers out of Ohio, as I recall, were going to show that Mitt Romney indeed had won the election, that somehow they were operating on a different level. They weren't looking at what polls were showing, and they probably influenced the way that Mitt Romney ran his campaign.
Yes, and I think this is the other part of the argument about the imbalance between the Republican Party and Fox News. Now, the first part is the one we're just discussing of the way the network is sort of a gatekeeper and a player in partisan politics. The other is the extent to which it's crossed the line from reinforcing people in their own view of the world, which I think anybody looks for. People naturally look for some kind of reassurance and enforcement of their point of view, towards fooling them about the outside world. I had a number of good friends who were working in the Romney campaign, and I think there was genuine surprise on election night that their candidate didn't win, because what they've been hearing, especially from Fox, is that no Americans could stand Obama anymore. They recognized that he was a socialist. They recognized the travesty of Obamacare, et cetera, et cetera. And certainly a large number of Americans did feel all those things, but not enough to turn President Obama out of office. So I think in any kind of competition, whether it's business or military or political or whatever else, having an accurate sense of the competitive landscape is indispensable. If you don't know your strengths, your weaknesses, the other side's strengths and weaknesses, mm-hmm. you can't possibly prevail. And so the argument is that Fox has provided a given blinders to Republicans in the competitive landscape.
Why is Fox, do you think, James, the most popular of the 24-hour cable news networks?
I think it's just better at cable news than the other ones are. You know, for example, there's a I actually got to interview Roger Ailes a few years ago for a piece I was doing in The Atlantic, and he is just a master of the technique of cable news in the ways that others aren't. He's famous, for example, having some of his producers just watch all the networks with the sound off for long periods of time and see which was more interesting to look at. Fox is often ridiculed for having, or at least it's noted that Fox has this enormous bevy of attractive, usually blonde women as its newscasters. And, you know, Ailes, I didn't ask him this, but he'd probably say, viewers in general would like to look at attractive people rather than unattractive people. And so I think the production values of news are better done on Fox than they are its competitors.
And as Bruce reminds us in the article that you write about, Ailes has wanted to put together this kind of network for a long time. It took him a while to get there, but when he got there, he got there.
He did, and also it's not generally known or remembered, but it's true that Roger Ailes is actually the founder of MSNBC. And so he got it going in its very, very early days. That was long before the sort of bifurcation of the Fox and MSNBC news realm. So he's been a television pioneer for a long time, a television innovator, but I think over the last 15 years, the evidence is that his political views have hardened in a way that may not have been the case, certainly back in the MSNBC days. And there is this, he travels around with this huge personal security detail, and he's, you know, he has this very kind of armed camp existence in his home dwelling. So as he's become better at having a all-encompassing news environment, his own views apparently have become more right-wing, too.
Mm-hmm. Was it important, do you think, initially for there to be a conservative outlet? Would you agree with Bruce's comments that the media was pretty liberal, perhaps because of what the country was going through, civil rights movement, World War II, et cetera, and there was a place for a conservative voice?
Yes, and I think that Bruce Bartlett argues in his paper, the first, you know, sort of half of it, for a whole variety of reasons, this is something I went into also in my book, Breaking the News, there has been a historical small L liberal bias in the national news media. That poll showed that year in, year out, national news figures vote for more Democrats for the presidency than the Republicans. And you can argue whether this is because of the kind of people who get into our business, whether it's because of some other force, but it just is a reality. And so Republicans, I guess, from the Reagan era onward, have had a sense that the mainstream media were not giving them the right kind of voice they wanted to have. And so I think a proper response to that would be to have all media outlets try harder to present a fair view of reality. The immediate step that Fox News took was to provide a sort of oasis for people who are looking for a different perspective. And before they did that, Rush Limbaugh, Fox started in the late 90s, 98, I believe, and that Rush Limbaugh had for almost 20 years before that, let's say 15 years before that, had a very successful, increasingly successful talk radio base with a very conservative pitch. So they recognized there was an audience for this different perspective, which they were going to fill.
Mm-hmm. And all of that happened because of we got rid of the fairness doctrine. I've been in radio long enough to remember the days clearly when we had to present balanced points of view with political topics. That's no longer the case. Rush realized that, right?
No, that it certainly is the case, and it's part of the long evolution for better and worse of our business. So when I was a kid in the late 50s and 60s growing up in California, you could get three networks, you could get sort of 2 7/8 networks. You know, CBS and NBC were large news networks. ABC was sort of struggling to keep up, and there were these very weak, public radio channels. And so there was an enforced mainstreamism that also was bolstered by the Fairness Doctrine, where for better and worse, the networks try to say, well, here is the sort of most dispassionate version of the news we can give you. The criticism of that was that it was too mainstream and too vanilla. The good part of it was they didn't become partisan mouthpieces one way or the other. With the technological flourishing of all these different channels, with the financial pressure on every part of the news media, everybody is struggling to get an audience, and it's because, and Roger Ailes demonstrated that a defined political perspective could be a winning formula on cable news. And can I make one other point here?
Of course.
I'm filibustering.
No, it's fine.
It's worth noting how small the audiences for all cable news are. I could be wrong on the latest figures, but usually at its very strongest times, Fox News, which is the strongest of the cable networks, has somewhere between 3 or 4, maybe at a peak, 5 million viewers. That is essentially 1% of the nation, 1 to 1.5% of the nation. And MSNBC and CNN are significantly smaller than that. So it's what has happened is that as a marketing matter, the niche approach to programming, not reaching 30 million people with the nightly news, but 3 million people with your political news, that's proven to be a winning economic formula. And it's had disproportionate steering effect on opinions, because everybody in the political world is part of that 3 million, and everybody in the media world is too. So mm-hmm. You can have a large leverage from what is quite a small audience in absolute terms.
I don't understand how you do that when the median age of Fox viewership is really quite old. It's 68, isn't it?
I was watching a replay of the French Open last night on TV because I hadn't seen it live, and I thought I was going to go crazy because the sequence of ads was male catheters, burial cost insurance.
Oh, no.
It was Medicare supplements and on like that. And if you look at cable news, including Fox, it's all stuff like that, because the advertisers know quite accurately who their viewers are. That and Foxes in particular are quite old and generally white and generally retired and largely Southern. But for reasons someone will diagnose fully later on, the 3 million people who are not representative of the mainstream country, somehow the message that goes to them has all the influence that we know it has.
Hmm. The thing that's really troubling about this, as is indicated in the headline in your article, there is something about watching Fox News that leads people to do worse on factual questions than those who don't watch any news at all.
This is the amusing part of the study. I mean, you can imagine that you would expect that if you polled MSNBC viewers and CNN viewers and Fox viewers and NPR listeners and Rush Limbaugh listeners, you would find differences in political beliefs, whether it's on same-sex marriage or medical care or whatever else. What a long series of studies has now shown is that simply on knowledge of the world, that there is a particular sort of outlier case of Fox News viewers, and they just know less about, for example, whether Egypt has had a revolution or what kind of government is now in charge in Russia or whatever else. And I think it's because it's related to the even more damaging effect of the Fox worldview, which is it's not so much that it is a factually hazy, it's that it's perpetually beset and outraged. Now, I think that one of the most troubling parts of American international military policy in particular is a sense that we're always about to get attacked and it's a really dangerous part of world history and so on, which objectively is not true, but is what you might think if cable news is giving you these, you know, three alarm fires all the time about the latest bad thing that's happened someplace.
Mm. And there are also edicts about how you deal with certain subjects, one of them being global warming, that you can't really say that global warming is embraced by most scientists. It is what, some scientists? I mean, you really, there's an edict from on top about how you address that subject.
This is a challenge that extends beyond Fox. I mean, all of the news business, as I'm sure you know too, is confounded when there's the instinct that we have in our business to say, well, there's one side of the story and there's another, and let's look at them. It's that can lead you into trouble when there are in fact two sides, but 99% of the logic is on one of those sides, and your instinct, self-protective or out of service to your listeners or whatever, is to say, well, here's the prosecution and here's the defense, here's the affirmative case, here's the negative case, even when that distorts the underlying reality. So I think that every part of the news media has had problems with this on the climate change issue in particular. And Fox, there's the additional fillip that I think there's an ambition to say not simply that it's a debate, but that one side of the debate is much, much stronger than any of the scientific evidence would contend.
We're going to welcome phone calls for James. James Fallows is our guest this hour. He invites us in his current writing in The Atlantic to look at a detailed study by Bruce Bartlett, how Fox News changed American media and political dynamics. It looks at what we were just talking about, how on some factual questions, those who watch Fox do worse on factual questions than those who don't watch any news at all. A little bit about the history of why this happened, if it did provide a welcome alternative to a liberal media. But there is something about getting information that's not true information, and then it becomes true because of people using the microphone for a political viewpoint, and also with a sense of perpetual outrage. James is with us this hour. We welcome your phone calls. I'm particularly interested in hearing from those of you who watch Fox News. Here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter, @KDunnShow. James is national correspondent for The Atlantic. He is a beautiful writer. He was the chief speechwriter for President Jimmy Carter. He has lived all over the world and reported from all over the world as well. To you, momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. James Fallows is with us this hour, and let's go to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We start with Jim in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
Hi, I don't want to... But on Fox News, but I'd like to have your guest take on this. There's a Pew Research poll or analysis, really, that I read, which said they analyzed nightly news broadcasts, and they came to the conclusion that TBS is the most even-handed and factually accurate news broadcast in nightly news. And online, this doesn't surprise me, the Nate Silver's Brilliant538.com is the most even-handed and factually accurate online representation of the news and politics. I know he's a fabulous, accurate pollster, so I just wanted to take my answer off the air and hear your guest comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
And before you go off the air, did you say CBS like Charlie or PBS like Papa?
PBS. He said PBS.
Okay, so I think those are... those are interesting points, I think, different ones for public broadcasting system and 538. PBS, I actually think their news hour is the main existing example of what mainstream news was like at its best a generation ago. And I say that with the goods and the bads of that challenge. A generation ago, because the audience for that sort of news, which includes me, that is the newscast I actually record on TiVo and watch when I'm doing exercise or whatever, it gives you a non-hysterical, balanced but not falsely balanced, globally sane a view of the world. So I think it actually does a very good job. 538, I think, was certainly superb during the last election cycle, the last two election cycles, in letting people know what is actually going on. It's different from other kinds of news organizations because it does have this data basis to it. But certainly what it does, it's excellent.
Let's go to Kay next in Grand Chute. Hi, Kay.
Hi. Hi. Thank you very much for putting me on today. And I am calling in support of Greta Van Susteren because she pushed for the release of our Marine that was in prison in Mexico, and she takes a cause like that, and she even went down there, and she and our government wasn't doing enough to get that man out of a Mexican jail, and I just think it is a wonderful thing.
James.
So I don't know enough about Greta Van Susteren, although I certainly know who she is and have seen her sometimes, to comment on that. I certainly take the listener's praise for her seriously. I'll use this as a pivot to compliment two other parts of the Fox team. I think Shep Smith, who does a lot of their daytime shows, you often see with him, he has the real news person's instinct, and I think he tries to be as balanced about things as he can. Also, it's interesting how Megyn Kelly has become an occasional in-house truth squad on Fox. And I think probably that the beginning of that was on election night 2012 when she was essentially saying to Karl Rove, you know, come on, who's getting whom? Look at the numbers here. You're not going to win. So I think that the two of them show flashes of what might be the next stage in the network's evolution.
Hmm. Well, do you think there was a suggestion in the article that you have to be considered, you have to say that you are a conservative to be an on-air host, or you have to act like you are conservative when you're on the air? Would you say that perhaps some of the people there are more balanced, but they're just acting conservative to get a good paycheck?
I wouldn't attempt to psychoanalyze any of these people because I only know a few of them. And I know during the hours of the day, there's a different cycle and emphasis and tone to the Fox report. Certainly, they're outright commentators, notably Hannity, but to a degree also Bill O'Reilly, have an overt political tone that it's not supposed to be so overt in newscasts. I will say that in addition to people having to say they're conservatives, there is the kind of captive liberal slut that exists on Fox. Bob Beckel has played that role. Juan Williams, who actually I've known for a long time, and his friend has played that role. Alan Colmes did it a long time during Hannity and Colmes. And so I think Fox likes to be able to say, well, see, we have these liberals on here, and somehow they're not able to rebut our arguments. So we've exposed ourselves to the liberals, and look, we still win.
Right, we still win. Here's an interesting email from Mark. As a business traveler, I'm always dismayed how pervasive Fox News is on televisions in public areas, in airports, hotels, convention centers. I've started asking that other broadcasting be played, but almost invariably get a shoulder shrug off from people who are clearly not the Fox News demographic. Do you have any thoughts, James, on why it is so pervasive in public places?
Yes, I've often, I think that's a question that's been on my mind a lot, too. I'm a private pilot. I think I'm probably the only, but I have to be the 0.1% of private pilots who have voted Democratic over the years. So whenever I go to little airports, it's always Fox News on there, too, and bigger airports as well. And I think it's a combination of several things. One is that there's an asymmetry in passion. The people who care that it is Fox News care a lot more than ones who would like it to be CNN or PBS or MSNBC or whatever. So I think that the managers are likely to hear more from them. There's the production values aspect again. It is just sort of more peppy generally to have Fox on there. The people look better. You know, it's better sort of from a horse flesh point of view. It's often, for background in public places, there is that. I don't know whether there has been a marketing campaign by Fox to make sure that to make themselves welcome in public places. I wouldn't be surprised that there were, but it's been, I think that has been an important part of making themselves seem as if they're reaching more than 1% of the public, because in half the public places you go, you see Fox News.
Yeah, interesting question. Let's go next to Jerry in Middleton. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Well, I'm an independent voter, and, you know, I just look at both of the news networks of Fox and MSNBC as kind of a yin and yang of propaganda, because it's like the Democrats are always protected and boasted on MSNBC, and then Fox is always boasting and protecting the Republicans, and it's the exact same thing, just in different formats, feel like we're being lied to.
James.
I'm not gonna take up all parts of that analogy, but I will say this. I think that there's a very, very important historical evolution that's happened here. That Fox News was developed not as a response to MSNBC, which was just kind of a plain vanilla network when it started, but explicitly as a counter to CNN and the New York Times, you know, not in its broadcast mode, but in its print existence, and CBS and NBC. And so it was, and PBS, and it was deliberately meant to be a counter to networks that thought of themselves not like today's MSNBC, but like the mainstream news networks. And so over the last 6 or 8 years, less 10 years, let's say, MSNBC has indeed become a mirror image of Fox. And they're of course, starting with the Keith Olbermann days back in the early George Bush years and on through, then it's become essentially a Democratic Party organ, as Fox News is essentially a Republican Party organ. But when Fox started, it wasn't in response to MSNBC. It was in response to organizations that thought of themselves as mainstream. So I think that the proper comparison is not so much the two, not so much Fox and MSNBC, but Fox and the networks that Fox thinks are partisan, but actually aren't, like the public broadcasting system or the mainstream networks, which still are trying harder than either Fox or MSNBC to say, okay, there's different sides of the news and it's not perpetual outrage. So your point about the comparison in 2015 is correct, but the path we got here by is significant, I think.
James, I'm wondering if political candidates, people who are running for president, have approached Fox and said, listen, we went through 2012, Mitt Romney, partially because of you, had to move much more to the right. Maybe he would have won if he had been more in the center. You're making it really hard for us to increase our appeal, which we need to do, and so we can't appear on your network anymore.
It would be interesting to know if those meetings go on. And I'll advance a hypothesis that some of your listeners may disagree with, but it's what I think, and so I will spell it out. Through the eons of American history, political coalitions and political movements go through swings towards the center and away from the center. And over the last, say, 25 years, in the post-Ronald Reagan era, the post-George, first George Bush era, the Republican Party generally has been in a away from the center mode. It's become more Southern, more white, more male in support. And you see that in the base in the Electoral College now, where you have the Democrats in five of the past six elections have won the popular vote for the presidency. The biggest states, apart from Texas, they now assume they're going to win every time. At some point, that will correct itself. At some point, there will be a Republican who cares so much about trying to win more of the women's vote, more of the Latino vote, more of the black vote, more of the young vote, and will adjust their positions. But that isn't happening now. And I think that the struggle you're seeing at the moment between, on the one side, people like, let's say, Jeb Bush and maybe Marco Rubio, and on the other side, Ted Cruz and Rick Santorum and maybe Scott Walker, maybe your own Scott Walker on the other, that is the same dynamic you're discussing. So those discussions with Fox News, I think, might be paralleled with discussions with the party hierarchy itself. And how that turns out in the next year or so, I think we'll have a whole lot to say about how the final presidential returns are in November of 16.
Tony in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
My statement basically is that now we're just looking basically at talking heads on TV and sound bites. And you're going to get real news off of people that catch stuff on their video phones and cameras and stuff and put it on the internet. It's really gone to the dogs, and it's really gone to, they don't criticize any of their advertisers or sponsors anymore. There's no real investigative journalism anymore. I mean, it's always going to the lowest common denominator. We don't find out about the dirty dealings of Scott Walker because nobody in the state wants to investigate him thoroughly. I mean, it's just sickening TV news. It's just, they go from selling salt to a murder, and then there's a carnival happening around the block. I mean, it's really ridiculous. It's
just, James.
I think we're living in the worst and the best era of the news, and I think you've accurately described the worst era. There's been a very interesting history of local TV news over the last, say, 25 years. People who produced local news discovered that if they had on at any given instant a car crash, a tornado, a rape, a missing child, a panda riding a bicycle, or whatever, people would watch their channel. And if they didn't, as soon as there were remotes, people would click away. And so all local TV news became the same, of just having that kind of stuff. If you don't have a tornado in your town, there's one in Oklahoma you can show, et cetera. So local TV news has gone downhill. And Fox has pioneered a model shown also by MSNBC of mainly, as you say, talking heads and commentators, because that is really cheap. It's much cheaper to have somebody come to the studio than have a reporting crew. On the other hand, if you look at the PBS NewsHour, they have people all over the world, and they're getting stuff from every place. And I know that my magazine is sending people all over the place. So there is stuff you can find now, which is better and more vivid and more fully featured than ever before. But there's also a lot that is just bad.
Right. And this thing about the weather, gall darn it, I've noticed that in the last year or so, it's now in the nightly newscasts all the time, too. It's usually East Coast, because heavens knows everybody lives on the East Coast. But you have people coming in and giving you 10 minutes on the weather, on tornadoes in various parts of the country. I wonder, why are they doing that? Do they think that everybody in the country is concerned about bad storms in New York?
So there's the first principle that weather in New York is national news, and we all know that.
Of course.
There's the second principle. There are actually climate issues, which are important news.
Yes.
I've been in California for the last month, and the drought there is a fundamental issue that's going to affect the world. But I think the main thing is, as we were discussing, that it's a sort of a cheap, tantalizing things. Anybody will watch a tornado. I'll watch a tornado. Tornadoes are really interesting. So, that shows the larger dilemma of the news and entertainment conundrum, because by definition, entertainment is entertaining. So if you want people to, if your main thing is making sure people don't click the remote, then something more entertaining is better than something less entertaining. And between a Supreme Court ruling and a tornado, it becomes an easy choice.
Oh, I want the Supreme Court ruling. I really do.
But there's this great tornado with two funnels.
Oh, James. Thanks, Tony, for your call. Wayne and Holman. Hi, Wayne.
Good afternoon to you and your guest. I'd like to make a couple comments on what I have heard on MSNBC. I don't watch the network. I wouldn't lower myself. But the segment was played by Charlie Rose, Norah O'Donnell, and Gayle King. I do watch the CBS Morning News. And what they did was they showed the segment from a program that was hosted by a fellow named Bashir. And Bashir said, and I quote, "What Sarah Palin needs is for someone to defecate in her mouth," closed quote. Norah O'Donnell almost fell off her chair. They looked at each other in disbelief. Ed Schultz of The Ed Show, to his credit, he apologized to Laura Ingraham, also on MSNBC. In reference to Laura Ingraham, said, and I quote, "that stupid talk show host slut," close quote, MSNBC. How would you comment on those remarks on MSNBC, sir?
I believe that Martin Bashir was canned because of that. Am I right in thinking that?
Yes, he was.
I was in China on a trip when this happened, so I didn't follow it with the minute care I might have done otherwise. But I think it wasn't as grotesque as it sounds, because there was some context for it. There was some background of somebody saying that the defecation in one's mouth issue was one that Martin Bashir wasn't inventing. But obviously it was outrageous, and I believe he was fired,
mm-hmm.
as he should have been.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, anything else?
No, I do. Thank you. I think that was a very fair analysis, and I'm glad that you said something, Kathleen, to the effect that he was let go, and he surely should have been.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. You do think of those places have to be making some money, and what bothers me, James, is you have this whole country and this whole world filled with people who have seriously studied some of the major issues of our time and have things they can teach us, even in a fashion that might be entertaining and informative at the same time. That's possible, and yet you get these same people on the air saying what they think about things, and it takes up the whole hour, and I'm thinking, who are you? Isn't there somebody who knows more about this than you do?
Well, in my role here as a guest for the whole hour with you, I feel a little self-conscious.
Oh, you're brilliant. It's okay.
and I'm going to buy time for a second. I remember now the context of this horrible Martin Bashir, okay, Sarah Palin thing. It was some controversy over slavery, and there'd been some slave account about how some overseer had been doing that to his slaves, and Sarah Palin has been saying that slavery wasn't so bad or something. So that was the background, but still it was terrible, and it was,
right.
That was why Martin Bashir was let go. So I think that it's, the good and the bad thing about the news and public affairs and politics and everything else is that we're all entitled to have our views about it. And there are people who've spent more time than either you or I have and thinking about their people who spent a lot less. And I guess we have to have some marketplace of ideas, hope, that over time, that sane ideas will prevail. And that, I think, was also the point that Bruce Bartlett was trying to make in his piece, that the Republican Party may realize that enclosing itself in a cocoon has been damaging, because they've been hearing too much of sort of their own propaganda and not having an accurate idea of the shape of the economy, the shape of political opinions, and all the rest.
Mm-hmm. James Fallows, our guest this hour. Welcome. More phone calls. Our lines have been crowded, but you can get through now. 800-486-8655. James is national correspondent for The Atlantic Monthly. He's written a number of books. He's worked for the magazine all over the world and done reporting on so many different issues. And he was President Jimmy Carter's speechwriter for quite some time. So we're talking about his latest piece, which is interesting, in which he says that all of us should look at this piece by Bruce Bartlett, How Fox News Changed American Media and Political Dynamics, which is a lengthy piece. And I think I don't know if we have a link to it on our Facebook page. If we don't, we will very shortly. So you can go to our Facebook page and read the whole article. James writes about this in his piece in The Atlantic, and we're talking about it. Our lines are crowded right now. You can send an email to talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to some Facebook comments here as well. From Jim, I don't disagree, he writes, Jim James, with the notion that Fox goes out of its way to distort reality. I don't watch that channel, but the real problem is the veracity of the news media in America. How many wars have been waged while the public has been kept in the dark? How about the real state of the economy? One can't blame all of this on Fox. Our media has a problem in telling the truth.
Yes, and as the author of a book called Breaking the News, How the Media Undermine American Democracy, I understand the argument. And The Atlantic, we've tried very hard to deal with all the issues that the listener is mentioning. So, yes, there are serious problems. There are problems in the media that spread vastly beyond Fox. I think we're just talking about a particular Fox one. I'm also just on the raccoon front. Here's another First Lady tidbit. Who's the only First Lady to have been fluent in Mandarin?
Ooh. I don't
the
know.
Answer, well, wait till the end of the show, then I'll tell you.
Okay.
I happen to know the answer to this.
Oh, you do? All right. Okay. Yeah. Well, so we're supposed to guess. All right. I'll think about it, but I don't. All right. You could have.
And her husband was the only president to speak Mandarin.
Hmm. Okay.
So, anyhow.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for the quiz, James.
It's okay. Actually, I'll tell you. It's Herbert Hoover and Lou Hoover.
The
Hoovers lived in China as engineers.
Oh.
And so before they came to the White House.
But
let us proceed. Let's proceed.
Okay. where were we? With telling the truth. Well, and somebody brought this up earlier, that there does seem to be, at least it's my perception, that there aren't as many people doing, and particularly when it comes to local coverage, you know, of City Hall, of the State House, of all of those issues. And we've got a lot of them going on in Wisconsin right now, and there are people who are working on the issue, but really heavy duty. That's what local papers used to do. They used to cover all of that. And I don't think there is as much of that anymore, to say nothing of what's happening on television.
Yes, that is the worst problem caused by the economic turmoil of the media in the last 10 or 12 years. That serious news reporting has never been a self-supporting business. It's always required some other kind of parasite organization, it's always been attached to some parent organization. It's been bundled with travel coverage when there are big, thick newspapers, et cetera, et cetera. As the bundling model of the news has been destroyed, the two things that have suffered most have been sort of City Hall reporting and State House reporting. So I think the next wave of trying to figure out how to offset that will involve having universities and nonprofits and other news organizations say we have to have more of this state government and city government accountability reporting. So, yes, mm-hmm. That's a real problem.
Jean in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm a great fan of James Fells and enjoy listening to him and reading him. And
thank you very much.
I have an opinion about the news. I watch PBS mostly. I look at the late local news, but I think... And I hate to say this because I used to think BBC World News was pretty good. I think Al Jazeera has just surpassed all of them. Al Jazeera has really good people who formerly worked for places like PBS, Ray Suarez, and other network personnel and BBC personnel. Very competent, very balanced, and they will often, very frequently, have a whole series on one topic where they'll spend an hour on that topic or a half an hour on that topic. And I think it's a shame that more people can't get Al Jazeera because they are doing a really good job. And BBC World, when they cover the weather, it's the East Coast, the West Coast. There's nothing in between. We don't exist.
James.
Yes, I agree about Al Jazeera. I think that every news organization has its awkward areas, and Al Jazeera has, when they're covering news from the Emirates, you can tell they're sort of walking on eggshells because that's their home base. Mm-hmm. But in their coverage of the U.S., North America, of Europe, Asia, I think they are very good, and I agree. And so I agree that the PBS NewsHour is very strong, and I think Al Jazeera is very strong and is a worthwhile part of the news diet for most Americans.
Mm-hmm. Plus, they run, which you don't see hardly any of anymore, documentaries.
Yes, indeed. And I've been struck how most of what you would have thought of as documentary channels like the Discovery Channel or even National Geographic, it's all these weirdo
right.
reality shows, you know, Fat Guys in the Wild or Airplane Repo, which as a as a pilot I love, but it's a, it's a strange form of documentary.
It is. Thanks, Gene. Richard in Viroqua, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
All right. Go ahead, sir.
I don't really watch the news anymore. I listen to podcasts. And if I'm going to watch something, it's probably going to be on RT America. But I listened to this really interesting podcast the other day on the Joe Rogan Experience about genetically modified organisms. For example, the two of them weren't screaming at each other. Like you, they were actually, in a three-hour podcast, able to contextualize the problem and come to some sort of antithesis, which I always thought what argument and debate was about. I can't imagine what Fox News lost 4 million viewers last year, and they're the number one news outlet on cable. I think they know what's coming. People just aren't buying the lie anymore.
Hmm.
And I'll take my comments off there. Thank
you. I am kind of out of the world of podcasts. Maybe you're into it, James.
I am somewhat into it. So, for example, when I'm going out for a run or going to the gym or whatever, I usually listen on my little Android smartphone to some kind of public radio broadcast, whether it's streams of the news or various public radio shows that I like to hear. And so it's part of that general revolution of people having information on their own schedule rather than what schedule at the time that it's being broadcast. And I think that in general, if we keep in mind that it's the best and worst of almost everything now, the sort of relaxed discussion that you can get on podcasts or like we're having now allows for sort of exploration of things you simply can't get on cable news, where the
right.
if the segment is 4.5 minutes long, that seems like, you know, the whole Carboniferous age, and it just everybody's sort of drumming their fingers. So I think that as people are finding these alternative ways to get more expansive discussions, that's generally to the good.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't even know where to find out about those podcasts. I got to get with the current century, don't I? I really do.
Well, I think that we're in a kind of primitive age of these things being available. The Apple iTunes store is objectively a bad way to have to get these things. And I think it's a whole separate two-hour discussion. But, yes, there will be easier ways to have downloadable podcasts pretty soon.
Okay. Thanks, Richard. Paul and Slinger, hi.
Good afternoon. I certainly concur with that lady from Appleton. But, you know, if you monitor the RT, the Russian propaganda tool on cable, and the Chinese one, and you monitor the BBC and the German news broadcast on the Milwaukee television station, and then you monitor NBC, CBS, and ABC, the domestic channels are all light-duty human relations matters or subjects, where the other stations are carrying, you know, news that's covered in The Economist in more depth. But explain to me why we, the local or the domestic channels, don't really go into depth on critical issues.
And we have about 45 seconds, James. Sorry.
I haven't followed RT. I do follow the Chinese network a lot since I used to live in China. I think that they have strengths and weaknesses. The reason that the other networks don't do that is everybody figured out their niche model, and most of the American outlets, for better or worse, have this niche model of the short, snappy, tornado-driven news.
James, always a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kathleen.
James Fallows, he urges all of us to read this detailed study, and it's very interesting, by Bruce Bartlett, How Fox News Changed American Media and Political Dynamics. That article and James's article in the current issue of The Atlantic on Fox News, well worth your attention, and it will lead to dinner time conversation, or breakfast or lunch, or whenever. James is a national correspondent, longtime writer for The Atlantic, and former speechwriter, chief speechwriter for President Jimmy Carter. Thanks to Scotty Myers and KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to Judith Sears Poisson for doing on-air production for us today here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News, which is Very good news from NPR is coming up in a moment, and then we'll be talking about First Ladies of the United States in depth. Stay with us.